You are very welcome to the Health and Fitness Show here on Midlands 103. And today we'll be speaking with Adele Weldon, who is going to chat to us very openly and honestly about her health journey over the last number of years and her recent menopause diagnosis. And I'm also delighted to be speaking with Dr. Caoimhe Hartley, who is a leading menopause specialist in Ireland. She's a GP, she's the founder at Menopause Health and so much more. And I'm really looking forward to talking to her about evidence-based help that we have for women and what supports are available. Okay, so I'm really looking forward to today's show, and you may be aware that World Menopause Day was the 18th of October, and it brilliantly has given an opportunity to have conversations about menopause and to highlight this particular area, because the reality is it's something that every woman, we have no choice, we have to go through it. Everybody is going to have our own individual journey. It could happen at any age. We'll all have different signs and symptoms, and we'll all have that'll impact our lives quite differently. For some people, menopause is okay and they get through it, and that's great. And for other people, it is a very, very significant journey with big impact on quality of life, well-being, physical health, mental health. And I think one of the great things is we now know more about menopause and treatment, but opening up conversations to normalise what women are going through, I think, are really important. And I'm delighted to have this opportunity to talk about this today. Now, I will say for the men who are listening in today, so obviously this is something that you won't have to go through. So it's very difficult for someone to understand a journey that they won't have to go through. But I will say it's important for you to listen to what women are going through and maybe be more aware of what the menopause is and what it actually means. Because, of course, at some point there will be a woman in your life, whether it's your sister, your mom, your partner, that needs some understanding and support. So I would ask you to tune in for this. And of course, we will balance this out later in the show with men's health, which is so equally important. But for today, we're going to have a chat about menopause. And I'm really delighted to introduce you to someone who's very special to me. So this is Adele Weldon. And Adele is going to share her journey, which wasn't a straightforward journey. And Adele has actually gone through early menopause. And I because I know her personally, and I'm so grateful that she's coming on to share her journey with me and with all of you. I'm actually just going to get started. Adele, thanks so much for joining me on the show. It's lovely to have you with me.
It is my pleasure, Dr. Diane Cooper, to be here. Well, AKA Di for the rest of our conversation.
Yes, well, I'm not called that at the dinner table.
Definitely not.
Adele is my beautiful sister-in-law, and she has had a significant journey, and she is so articulate and so just someone who just wants to help people with every fibre in her body. So I think this, my first question to you, Adele, would be, why did you want to share your story?
I suppose you mentioned it there. It's about awareness, isn't it? And I know when we spoke about the possibility of me coming on, imposter syndrome takes over, like it does, and I think especially for women, unfortunately, because I was like, well, I'm not straightforward and I haven't gone through the full HRT journey yet, but at the same time, I've had a journey. And I suppose throughout that journey, it could be very isolating at times. We didn't have the knowledge that we have now. And it would have been amazing to have had, I suppose, the awareness that's here in present day and all that accessible knowledge to be able to guide me as a teenager and in my 20s and in my 30s and now in my early 40s. And the only way we get that awareness out there is by all of us coming together and sharing and collectively using our one voice to be able to be one for women, but also for men, as you were saying, and children and everyone to understand just how powerful our bodies are and also how powerful it is to have our voice coming together and to be able to give that message to everyone else who might be going through similar symptoms.
Absolutely, because look, I've said it before on the show, I've been running lifestyle programs and all sorts of programs for the last 20 years. I've been listening to women, I've been listening to everything they're going through, and often silently. Mm. And it's about time that we don't suffer in silence anymore, and that we get out there and we ask for help and we use our voice for ourselves. Mm. And just when you mentioned that, so I know, Adele, your journey actually started quite early. So, like, we're going back to the teenage years.
Mm, yeah, it did. And again, I suppose I'm somebody, and I'm putting my rabbit ears up here, complex case is what I have been deemed for every medical
professional. Don't you love to hear that? Yeah.
That's it. I'm the complex case. So I suppose, again, it's the awareness that I want people, especially mams and teenagers that are listening now. So that goddamn puberty, when mm-hmm. that hit 13, it was life changing. But unfortunately for me, what it did was, it was debilitating. That every time I would have had a period as a teenager, I was in bed for 2 or 3 days. I would have had like horrific cramps. I would have been on the toilet for various reasons. TMI to a lot of our listeners, but a lot of women will know what we're talking about. I would have had temperatures, I would have fainted, really, really severe, now looking back, symptoms. But at the time, unfortunately, there was this kind of, I suppose, an attitude of, oh, she just suffers badly with her periods. And yeah. That's it. It's women's health and you kind of get on with it. And I tried to get on with it. I had a Saturday job, which I loved. But one Saturday a month, they had to send me home because I'd be fainting, or they'd have to hide me from the customers.
See, this is the thing. So you're talking about something that happens every month for many, 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 many years. And this is before we even hit the menopause journey. So this is a very significant life impacting journey from a very, very early age. And I know you're not alone with that.
No. And I suppose, to be fair to my mam, the medical research wasn't out there for women's health as well. And she did go to the GP, and the GP did think it was just, it's unfortunate, but that's what she has to live with. Now, doing my research and with all the knowledge that we have and we can access, and we're in a very lucky place, our generation, to be able to access that
information. Absolutely, yeah.
Which our mums and our grandparents and previous generations didn't have. But now, and it's, you know, the professionals have agreed with me, is that I probably was suffering from endometriosis, where the lining of your womb was growing outside, and that's why all my the bathroom issues would have been happening, as well as the temperature, as well as the horrific cramps. God bless hot water bottles. I had 10 of them at one stage. And then because it got to a stage where that just wasn't sustainable, that I couldn't live my life like that, I did go on the contraceptive pill then when I was 18, which did reduce the symptoms. But then it escalated into other symptoms for all of my 20s then after that as well.
Yeah, so you definitely didn't have a linear journey. You had up and down and sideways and backwards and forwards and everything. So it was quite significant in your 20s.
Yeah, it was. So what happened was my symptoms, as in I could get through a month, my period, still had symptoms, but I think it was in regard to the higher end of probably what other women went through, but it was bearable. I could live my life. I'd figured out kind of how to manage it each month. But the weight gain, that was the biggest thing. Now, all of us, don't get me wrong, I lived my life in college. It was brilliant. And we all came out with that college stone. But for myself, it was always that bit extra. And when everyone else was looking and doing their best to lose it, it just would not budge for me.
Yeah.
Now, at the time, and again, I can only talk from my perspective, but I think a lot of women will relate to me when I say this, we turn it in on top of ourselves. We self-blame, the shame, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, I'm not doing this right, everyone else can do it, why can't I do it? Now, again, with knowledge and understanding and learning, I know that my body just was not releasing that fat, that it would not allow me to be able to do that. And I suppose we're going to talk, I know, about this a little bit later, but one of the things I want women to hear, and teenagers and girls, is listen to your gut. Because I would have tried and gone to, I think, as Mammy used to say, we've shares in every Weight Watchers and every Slimming World and every other weight loss programs that are out there. But I could see it working for other people and just could not understand why it wasn't working for me. So that was one of the main symptoms. And I suppose what I did then was I came off the pill to try and see if that would help me lose the weight. Now, it did to a certain extent, but what I did then was escalate other symptoms I hadn't experienced before. So that would have included hair loss, hirsutism, which for listeners who might know is facial hair, acne, but again, you're not talking spots, you're talking these horrific volcanoes that exist underneath your skin. I've always suffered really dry skin, but this was like another level of that itchiness, uncomfortable, not sleeping. And when I went then to consultants and endocrinologists and gynecologists, I was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries then in my mid-20s. And there's still a question mark now about whether that was the right diagnosis or not.
And that's, you know, that's nearly, you know, that's a number of years ago and we're still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
So this is why the complex case keeps coming
exactly,
up. There's no clear diagnosis. But, you know, you're going through an awful lot at times in your life where there's also big life things happening. You're trying to juggle so much and you've careers and you know there's just so much going on and you're having to battle these things with no clear answers, which of course you did, because Edele is a trooper. For everyone who knows her, you'll know this. But yeah, so that brings us up to the PCOS. And then from there then?
So from the PCOS, I suppose the one thing was when polycystic ovaries is where cysts develop on your ovaries. It fluctuates your hormones, it can affect your fertility. And I suppose the one thing was when I had all my blood tests done, what was coming back was my bloods were normal and I'd no cysts on my ovaries. However, due to all my other symptoms, it was put down. We've no other diagnosis really to give you. So this is the diagnosis we're giving you now. But I didn't just accept that from one person. I spent an absolute fortune.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, access in women's services back then was a very expensive hobby.
It was indeed.
So, but that was the result I was getting. So I was put on another form of contraception, and that pumped estrogen into my body. Now, what that did, again, in hindsight, looking back, was we are a very full-chested generation of women or genetics in our family. But my breasts would become like very, very enlarged because of the hormones at the time, which resulted out of my own cost having to get my breasts reduced when I was 27 as well. Again, another side effect from, you know, being on the wrong medication at the time. So following that, then, as I said, I managed as best as I could. My symptoms were reduced and bearable, but I met another consultant then who gave me a new diagnosis, and that was just at my 30s. And what he believed was it wasn't polycystic ovaries. He didn't think I had too much or too little of hormones. What he felt was that my body just wasn't able to cope with the hormones that I was on. So he left me on a contraceptive pill, but he also put me on another medication called spironolactone. Again, I'm not an expert, but with spironolactone, from what I know, can be used for liver disease. It's to do with hormones that are released at the bottom of my back. After that, Google it. I'm not going to pretend I was just thankful to have another course of treatment that might work. And you know what? It did to a certain degree. But again, this is women needing to find advice, be honest, to break down taboos. What it hadn't been said to me, and I'm really disappointed that it wasn't explained or even that it wasn't recognised as something important to tell me, was what that actually did was completely reduced my libido. It completely fights testosterone and puts it down. And to think that a professional didn't think that was an important thing to discuss with a woman in her 30s.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
You know, is very disappointing. So that's another side effect of my journey, unfortunately.
See, this is the thing. Like, I think we need to realise, like, hormones are extremely complex.
Yeah.
They're complicated. Once they go out of sync, once they go higher, lower, and they can, and then of course when you're ingesting in some way other types of hormones and treatments, they have a massive impact on everything. And the unfortunate thing is we never know as women which way this will go for our journey. And so Edele, you certainly have had your journey in this regard. So now, Edele, you've just recently been diagnosed with early menopause. Which did it come as a surprise or a shock to you?
Another label that adds to them all. No, it didn't. I suppose during my 30s was the time then, I suppose during my 20s was trying to get answers. During my 30s was a little bit of acceptance as much as I could and just minding myself and looking after myself. And then how the perimenopause and I suppose what the early menopause symptoms started was my mid-30s when I realised that it was a medical issue why my libido wasn't strong. And I want to say this just very briefly in regards to women again, just minding themselves, minding their mental health. That was a journey. I got there. Sorry, that baguettes. I'm okay. I'm back. But, you know, I'm here to be an open book. But
absolutely. And, Adele, on that point, like, one of the reasons why I'm just so thrilled that you're on the show and I'm so thrilled that there are more conversations about this is because there's all of these physical things going on, but the mental health side of it and the journey is difficult. And it's you, as you know, are not alone. There are women all over the country, all over the world going through this and often silently. And I think it's just so great that you're able to come on here and share your journey. And you're very, very brave. And I've great admiration for you because obviously this is a public platform. But I know you genuinely just want to, if you can, this is what you do all the time, is to help and take care of people, which is why we love you so much.
Mental health side of things. Yeah. So we just always need to be talking, looking after ourselves and knowledge. Once I knew what it was my body was doing, how these hormones were affecting me, I came off everything. Just said, right, I'm going to do this. I started a health and fitness program. I was following every diet there was and thinking, you know what, I can do this myself. I don't need medication. And unfortunately, my body just didn't do what I was told at all or what I wanted it to do. And what it did was then it started me into the early menopause. Yeah. And I suppose one of the most obvious symptoms I'm going to tell people is the hot flushes, as we know, my irregular periods. But the other thing I want to say to women and to, you know, to again, always be kind and look out for yourself. What is the fatigue? And I'm not talking about fatigue where you're lying on the couch and you're watching Netflix. I mean the debilitating. You cannot even to get up out of bed to go to the bathroom is a debate.
Yeah.
You know, you're stepping over things that you really shouldn't. At one stage, there's always the story I tell everyone, my poor cat got sick and I just stepped over it because the energy just was not there. And that's something that I knew was definitely hormonal, but nobody else could justify that to me or validate that to me at the time because it hit me every period I had of 3 days where I used to describe it like a lead blanket would be put on me and I'd sleep for 3 days and then whoosh, it's off and then I'm back now. That's fine. So that was something. So my mid-30s, it threw me into early menopause. But it gave me information. I needed to go through that research for myself.
Yeah.
And I met the most amazing woman who was a GP, and she was only a locum GP when I went back to her. My blood pressure was really high. The brain fog, I couldn't get words out. My anxiety was sky high. The hair loss, the hair acne, all those symptoms came back with a bang. Which is very lovely and glamorous, as it always is. And it was her who told me what was happening. Mm-hmm. I've never met that doctor since. And that was me after being to every consultant there was at the time. And she explained that I was in perimenopause. She explained how my weight worked. She explained everything. So she put me back on a continuous pill and on the aldactone then. And then it was me thinking, right, so this is me for life now. You know, what do I do? There's go through menopause. Hopefully that's not going to put me down a downward spiral, but it was always there and the worry was always there about what happens in the next stage. And then, thankfully, this movement called menopause has started in Irish society, in UK society and everywhere else, where suddenly I'm not alone.
Yes.
And that's where we are today. And that's telling our story and that's getting our information and that's empowering ourselves and being strong. And being able to have these conversations, because there's going to be, I'm an open book, there's a lot of people who know me going, I'm so sick of her talking about menopause and hormones. And then there's others going, God, I didn't know your journey. Because sometimes when you don't have the words, how can you start talking about your journey?
Absolutely.
So that's why I'm so delighted and grateful to be born in a time when that information is now there for us, Rim, and that the words are there, we can articulate what's going on with our body and we can support ourselves through it.
Absolutely, Edel. And then I suppose from there then, what's next for you?
So what's next is I have met with an amazing menopause specialist called Caoimhe Hartley, and she's again told me I'm a very complex case, but she's up for the challenge, so she is. And it was probably one of the first consultants who I've met who I felt really listened to, and everything I was saying going, oh God, do you think this is all in my head? She's like, no, and she could explain things. And I was on a high when I left my appointment, and I'm going to be starting HRT this month. It's an estrogen gel and a progesterone. I'm always confused because I know there's a body identical progesterone, and I'm starting that this month as well. So I'm really looking forward, and I'm really to starting it, but also I am really hopeful for the future now as well.
I am so delighted because having known you for a very long time, that hope was and answers and support was absolutely badly needed, and I'm so thrilled that you're in this place now. Edel, just before we go, do you have any advice for any of our listeners who are thinking about this or going through this or not sure if they're in it, or any advice, please?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So for any women that don't have had a complex journey like myself but feel they could be in perimenopause, symptoms normally start at 45, menopause starts at 51. There is an amazing group of women led by Sally Ann Byrne. It's called the Irish Menopause. They have a Facebook page and they are a community of knowledge and support. So that would be the first place I would encourage women to turn to. You can do a one-on-one with Sally Ann, who can prepare you then for going to your GP to talk about the supports you feel you need, or if you feel you need to go to a specialist. So that's kind of the grounding advice level that I'd recommend for people to come to do, sorry, women to do. And then the other thing is just, you know, listen to your gut, be kind to yourself, talk to people and be open to that support, because it's life changing when you do.
Absolutely. Edel, I want to thank you sincerely for coming on the show. I know that you will be so helpful to so many people listening today, and I want to wish you from the bottom of my heart the absolute best journey moving forward, and I look forward to seeing how all of this goes for you. Thanks for coming on, Edel.
Thanks, Di. It's been a pleasure.
Joining me on the line now is Dr. Caoimhe Hartley. She is a GP, menopause specialist and trainer, founder at Menopause Health, and she's an advisory board member with European Menopause and Andropause Society. Caoimhe, you're very welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Not at all. Delighted to be here. Thanks a million.
And Caoimhe, you've actually been in the news quite a bit over the last few weeks, and it really makes me smile and happy to see all of the wonderful work that you're doing. And I suppose the first thing I saw recently was you were the lead author on the new Irish College of General Practitioners Menopause Quick Reference Guide, which I thought, what a lot of work that goes into that. But I'd say that is just, it's such a great resource for GPs.
Hopefully it will be a good guide. Yeah, no, it was lots of work, but totally worth it. And I had a great, great help from other contributors like Dr. Deirdre Lundy and Dr. Nicola Cochrane and Brenda Moore and Karen Self and other GPs who gave really valuable input into this. So it was a team effort, but hopefully now, as you say, a really good resource for GPs and other healthcare professionals.
Brilliant, absolutely. And then I also saw just only in the last couple of days that we now have a HSE dedicated menopause service, which was launched in the Rotunda Hospital, which is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's all go, isn't it? Exactly, which is great. We have a public clinic through the National Maternity Hospital in Hollis Street, and that's headed up by Dr. Deirdre Lundy and Nicola Cochrane, and they run this fabulous service through Hollis Street, and that's been up and running for a good few months now at this stage. And so the Rotunda Clinic that just got launched this week, that's my baby, along with Dr. Vicky O'Dwyer, who's a consultant gynecologist. So we're delighted to have that up and running this week. So hopefully we'll be adding to the accessibility for women to, you know, to access care for their perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms. And I believe there's hopefully three or four more clinics opening up around the country as well.
That's absolutely incredible. It must make you so happy. Like I just thinking for myself, kind of in the lifestyle space, like I've been listening to women for the last maybe 15, 17 years, kind of talking about their struggles and, you know, maybe they weren't sure kind of where to go or what options are available to them. But now we've had so much talk, thankfully, in the media about menopause and trying to have all of these conversations and bring these things to light. And now to see these dedicated services, like what difference will that make?
Hopefully a huge difference for the women who need us. I mean, obviously not everybody is very symptomatic as they go through the menopausal transition. There's definitely 15 or 20% of women who, you know, their periods might stop and maybe they have some symptoms but they aren't impacting on their quality of life, or they don't get symptoms at all and they feel well. Now, they still potentially have some changes to their long-term health and there are things that need to be discussed, but they might, you know, find that transition quite easy. However, for the other 80% of women, and certainly at least a fifth of women, we think, they do experience symptoms that are impactful, that change their ability to enjoy things, their ability to work, their ability to function. And we want to provide somewhere for these women to go and not just get support, which they hugely need, but get really reliable, credible, evidence-based advice and information to really set them up for the rest of their life. So hopefully that's what we're providing now.
Yeah, absolutely crucial. And just, I suppose, while we're talking about it then, so for women who are at this stage of life, what options are available to them?
Yeah, I think the first protocol is to talk to your GP. So if you feel that you might be perimenopausal, and that's often a really, really difficult diagnosis to make, because perimenopause is like a slippery little thing and it's really elusive. You can have symptoms that come and go. We can't do a blood test for it. And we can go through this maybe in a second on how we actually kind of try and tease apart, well, what is, you know, something that's hormonal and what may not be hormonal in origin. So women who may be perimenopausal and women whose periods have stopped and they're menopausal, and they might be experiencing symptoms. And again, there's this, you know, very long list, unfortunately, of potential symptoms with menopause. But women who do need treatment and feel, okay, this is really having an impact on my life and I want to talk to someone, the first place to go is probably your GP and have a very, hopefully, frank and a helpful discussion about where to go from there. And really what direction we take comes down to a couple of different factors. It comes down to someone's own values and what they want to do. There's lots of women out there who don't want to have hormonal treatment and who want to look at lifestyle intervention alone. And that's really important that we respect that. And there's other women who need hormonal treatment because their symptoms are so severe or for health reasons. And we kind of, you know, you can talk through all of those options. And there's other women who may be not very symptomatic but want to look at their long-term health and how that's changed with menopause. And again, you can look at hormonal options, non-hormonal options, lifestyle changes. So it's a long conversation about teasing through what symptoms are bothering what person and what suits this person in terms of which direction they want to go. And sometimes it's a mix of all three.
Yeah, and probably important because as you said, there are so many symptoms. Like you might think, well, you know, but maybe I'm having these symptoms for a different reason. It's probably important not to ignore the symptoms and actually just go and have that conversation so that like someone like yourself and an expert in this area can help people actually figure out, well, actually, oh, wow, I am in menopause and I do need some help and there are options. I wonder how many women maybe have kind of milder symptoms and mightn't realise that it's because of this reason.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of familiar with hot flushes and night sweats, and that really comes the kind of classic symptoms that we'd associate with menopause. The things that trip people up are perimenopause. So these are women who are still having periods. They may be irregular, but they're still having periods. But what's happening in the background is that their ovarian production of hormones like estrogen has started to fluctuate and change and be more erratic. And those symptoms can really sneak up on you. So things like worsening PMS type symptoms, you know, feeling more emotionally labile, maybe feeling more irritable, maybe feeling more low, like feeling flat and not being able to get the same amount of enjoyment out of things that you did previously. And even there's other things like cognitive changes. We see women often report a change, particularly in verbal fluency. So their ability to find the right word, to think of someone's name, and all of that can have a really big impact on your confidence, both in work, at home, socially. And there are things that can really sneak up on you, as I say, they're not the kind of, you know, smack you across the face, I'm getting a hot flush. It's really easy to kind of objectively see. And there are often things that women, I think, almost attribute to, like, you know, well, it's normal and it's part of maybe aging and there's nothing I can do about it. And so they let it slide when actually there's lots that we can do potentially.
Yeah, and that's exactly why it's so great for kind of all of this to be, you know, for the media and to be paying more attention to menopause and creating more awareness, because genuinely you mightn't have known previously that they were symptoms. So it's good to be getting that information out there.
Yeah, it's about joining the dots, I think, and realising that, look, you've estrogen receptors from the top of your head to the tips of your toes, and how these symptoms manifest when, as you lose estrogen, as you move through perimenopause and then to menopause when your ovaries have stopped producing estrogen. I think joining the dots and knowing that, okay, hot flushes, as I say, are so well known, but things like burning tongue or tingling, I think of formication where you get tingling, crawling skin, or a change in joint aches and pains or fatigue, or, you know, like the list goes on. Vulvo-vaginal symptoms are very common too. So changes in vaginal tissue, which can lead to vaginal dryness, uncomfortable sex, and even urinary symptoms. So things like peeing frequently or recurrent urine infections and mood changes, which I keep sort of bringing back in. But I bring them back in because they're so important and they can be so impactful. Yeah. And knowing that, okay, maybe they're due to some other cause, and that's always a possibility, but they might be hormonal and there might be something that we can do to help.
Which is absolutely crucial. And just when you're talking about this, so for me, I'm trying to think, right, if I was in your role, with all of these symptoms, is it a nightmare to make a diagnosis, or how do you go about doing this?
Is it okay if I say yes?
Yes.
Sometimes it is. Well, like, it is sometimes a nightmare, because I can have someone sitting in front of me who, you know, is maybe hasn't finished having periods yet, so they're still perimenopausal, and maybe has a lot of what we call psychosocial stressors. So, you know, might have a very stressful job or have other stresses at home, like financial stress or relationship stress or whatever it might be. And we're trying to tease out what of this, you know, say in terms of your mood, what's being caused by hormonal change and what's being caused by all this, you know, other factors in your life. And there is no easy way of teasing that out. And I'm often trying to do that having just met someone 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I don't know them the way your GP might know you. So that's why, like, our initial consultations are 45 minutes. And that's the same in the Rotunda Hospital. And we were kind of strict about keeping that at a 45-minute level, because you need that length of time to really help someone. I find sometimes I'm just a sounding board. Like, you know, you give people the room to explore these things themselves, and they can often figure it out themselves a little. You know, well, look, I do feel like I have a lot of stress at home, and I do feel some of it may be due to that. And we talk about things like counselling and cognitive behavioural therapy or other things that might be helpful. But I think most often it's just a melting pot of lots of different things. And so your symptoms are actually multifactorial. They're not caused by one thing. And the problem is often not fixed with one thing, then the solution to everything is not HRT. And equally, you know, if you're getting dreadful hot flushes and night sweats, well, the solution's not going to be counselling either. So it's often a combination approach.
Yeah, I was literally just about to say that, because there's so much involved in this. There is no way there's going to be one answer to everything. One size fits all. Absolutely not. And it's great to hear that people would have that time, because that's not something you can do in 10 minutes. Like, there's just so much involved in this. It's great to hear that you give that time, and I can completely understand why the treatment has to be many potential options or a mixture of options.
It can be really frustrating, I think, for some patients who, like, it would be so much easier if the answer was always, this is a hormonal issue and nothing else, and it's going to be fixed with estrogen and off you go. But unfortunately, that isn't the case. I mean, estrogen is far and away probably the most effective treatment we have for hormonal symptoms at menopause. But as I say, that's often only 50% of the picture or 80% of the picture or whatever, depending on the person in front of you. So I think realistic expectations are really important. And I think having the right support is really important. And allowing patients come back after they're, you know, they have done a trial of HRT for 3 months to say at the review, look, I'm, you know, this is better and that's better, but these other things are not better. And exploring that with them and and having the support to kind of say, well, look, this, you know, maybe this is something that we need to look at a different approach for. And that's OK, too.
And just when you mention HRT, Caoimhe, and I know it's not the answer for everybody, but for people where it may be helpful, but maybe they might be a bit nervous for whatever reason, like what's the latest evidence we have for effectiveness? Or what would you say to somebody who, look, you know that they would benefit from it, but they might be a little bit nervous of going down that route?
I think most people who are nervous about hormone therapy, their concern really revolves around the risk of breast cancer, which is very understandable because that's what would have been in the media and in mm-hmm. the press for the last, you know, Donegal for the last 20 years. And that is born out of two studies, but one in particular called the Women's Health Initiative that was done in the 90s. And they published their report in the early 2000s. And after that report was published, we saw rates of HRT prescribing fall by about 60 to 70% across wow. the globe, if not more, to be honest.
Wow.
And it took a really long time for that trend of fear to be slowly rolled back. And the reason it has been rolled back, there's a couple of reasons. One is because when we say HRT, we're actually talking about lots of different types of it's a type of medication as opposed to one particular medication. So hormone therapy is usually a combination of two hormones, estrogen, and if you still have a womb, we give you a second hormone called progestogen. And so there's lots of different ways and types of giving those two hormones to people, and some are safer than others. And we now have a more modern approach with hormone therapy. We've safer estrogens, and we definitely have safer progestogens. So that was one of the big changes. But the other change was that in 2012, they actually reanalyzed that big study back in the 90s. And the more recent take on the results of that study would suggest that actually the breast cancer risk was grossly overstated and sort of, exaggerated in the press and created a lot of fear that was maybe unfounded.
Yeah.
So a lot of my job is about teasing that through with somebody and then contextualizing that risk and saying, okay, there are health benefits to being on hormone therapy for most women. And there is a breast cancer risk if you take estrogen and progestogen over the age of 50. But what is that risk? And if you want to put numbers on it, the British Menopause Society would say there's about 3 to 5 extra breast cancers diagnosed out of 1,000 women on hormone therapy for 5 years. So when you put numbers on it, that risk is actually quite small. And it's quite similar, if not slightly less, than the risk we would see with moderate amounts of alcohol intake and its impact on breast cancer risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it is offset by this reduction in osteoporosis risk or brittle bone disease. Mm-hmm. And it might be offset by a small reduction in cardiovascular disease improvement. So there's a bit of a, and obviously very individual. Some people have higher risk of starting baseline risk of breast cancer, and other people, you know, have established osteoporosis by the time they come in and see us, and they will gain more from HRT. So it's a really individual weighing scales kind of back and forth trying to decide where that balance lies between benefit and risk.
You see, that's the thing, and we can often, and I see it myself as well in my own field, like a study will come out and someone will run with some sensationalist comment that really and truly, when you actually look at the evidence, not founded. So I think the message is to, like, you know, go to the expert, you know, go to your GP, get your consultation and get the correct evidence at this point in time. And of course, as you said, treatments and options change over time as well with advances. So definitely please get your information from the experts, I think, is a big message here.
I think so, yeah. And I think bearing in mind, if someone leaves my practice, if you like, with a prescription for hormone therapy, or they leave with a prescription for one of the medications that is a non-hormonal therapy, or they leave with no prescription because we haven't ended up going down that route, it makes no difference to me. I don't benefit from somebody starting a prescription or not. So I am totally objective. Like but all I want is that I have someone who comes back in 3 months and is happy. Then, you know, that makes my life easier and better, and I'm delighted for them. But there's no agenda, because it just makes no difference to me if someone starts hormone therapy or not. My job is to interpret the evidence that's there, be up to date with that evidence, and then help someone put that into the context of where they are coming from, their medical history, their goals, their particular set of symptoms, etc.
Absolutely. And just on that, I will say that I actually do know some women who have gone to you and they have absolutely like in terms of their quality of life, their well-being. Now, obviously, I'm not going to say anything about their treatments, and they all have different paths. But they absolutely have found that the support that you gave them has been so invaluable to them. So I would just second what you're saying. It's not like and I was actually going to ask you as well, why did you decide to specialise in this area, Caoimhe?
I know, you're only saying all those nice things because you're on the
I'm really not because I have, as I said, I'm 17 years listening to the pains of like people saying, like they'll come to me for a lifestyle thing, but they'll just be talking about all their symptoms and they're struggling. And people would say to me, I literally feel like I'm going mad. I don't know what to do. I can't think. It's very upsetting. Like I'm doing the best I can from the lifestyle perspective. But for me to be able to say, well, actually, we have these wonderful specialists that I really think that you should go and talk to, and then to listen to the other side of the journey where they come back and say, do you know what, and like you said, because nothing is an instant fix, but a couple of months down the line, having been to you and having been to other wonderful people who specialise in this area and this country, and they're starting to regain control of themselves, of their thoughts, of how well they feel, this makes the world of the difference to anyone who is devoting their lives to looking after people. So I can absolutely tell you, I'm not just saying this because we're on the radio.
But actually, that kind of answers the question you asked about why I do it. It's totally selfish because I love people coming back and telling me I'm great and they feel better. And it's constant positive reinforcement that, you know, and it's not me half the time. It's the medication or the route that we've helped them kind of choose to go down. But my background is general practice, and GP is it's such a difficult, amazing job. Mm. Like, you know, it really is. But you have to be an expert in everything, and I find it totally overwhelming. And then I've always loved women's health from the very beginning. So you do, as part of your GP training, I would have done a 6-month rotation through gynecology in the hospital, and totally loved it. And decided that as soon as I qualified that I would stick to women's health, which I did. And I worked in really wonderful, dedicated women's clinic in Canada for a few years. And it was while I was there, actually, that I had the opportunity to train through the North American Menopause Society. And then as soon as I got a bit of confidence, it's like, you know, when the word gets out, I thought it would be this niche side. You know, I would just do it very occasionally. We'd have the odd menopause consultation. But as soon as word got out, it became really obvious really quickly that actually there was a huge gap in provision for these women, and I sort of went from doing almost general women's health to being overtaken by menopause stuff and perimenopause. So when I moved home into Ireland, that's what I decided to pursue, and I love my job, I have to say.
I can definitely hear that. And as I said, I have testimonials to that effect from some of the women that you've been working with. And so you've obviously set up the menopause health business clinic.
Yeah, that's right. So we're based in Dalkey. We're a private clinic in Dalkey, and people can self-refer through our website. It's really nice to have the Rotunda clinic and be working in the public system as well, because I feel really passionately about access to this. I think it's great for both women who maybe have a medical card or maybe don't want to go privately, and women who have more complex medical history and maybe need to be seen in a more kind of specialist environment. So I'm sort of delighted to have both, you know, and be in that kind of multidisciplinary team in the hospital is nice. I've everything on site. I've really good support from the gynecology team there. We've really good access to investigations. So yeah, it's great. Really good.
That's fantastic. And then lastly, Caoimhe, because you're very busy, I know I need to let you go, but how can, even speaking of the Rotunda, how can people get access to that service?
So I think there's, you need to be in the catchment area of the Rotunda Hospital, and I'd love to be able to tell you what that is, but I actually don't know. It's kind of complicated, the geography of it, but you could talk to your GP, who probably would know, and then your GP would make a referral through a thing called HealthLink, which is the electronic referral systems that we use for the hospitals, and they refer directly to the menopause clinic in the Rotunda.
Fantastic. Dr. Caoimhe Hartley, I want to thank you so much for your time. I know that your advice here, your expert advice, is going to be so helpful to so many women. So thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks very much for joining me this evening on the Health and Fitness Show. If you missed any of this show, or indeed any of the previous shows, you can listen back to our podcasts, which you can find on midlands103.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. I would like to say a sincere thank you to Laois Sports Partnership, Offaly Sports Partnership and Westmead Sports Partnership for sponsoring this show for the last few months. It's been great to bring all of these health and fitness and nutrition related topics to you. I hope you've really enjoyed them. We'll be taking a short break for a few weeks and then I will be delighted to be back with you in the future to talk about many, many more great things related to health and fitness. So thanks very much for giving me your time and I hope you've enjoyed the show so far and I really look forward to coming back on air with you in a few weeks' time.